winning is hard. So I think tonight was a great testament for our kids and how much they love each other and how much they love playing for each other and this staff. And when I say it was for South Carolina, it's a great night, you know, for Gamecock Nation and for the Carolina fans across the state.
Yeah, it was awesome. You saw our players respond to the fans that were sitting in the corner. They're fired up. Our support staff fired up. The energy inside of the locker room was awesome. It was a dance party, man. It was just the way it should be after a big win.
You know, we have an expectation that we're going to win easy, but sometimes it's not so easy. I think it's difficult to win in this conference. I think it's difficult to win.
You were down by six to go for it on fourth and goal at the seven instead of kick. Can you talk about that a little bit?
We're going for it. We walked in the stadium, we're going for it. There was no question. We're going for the win the whole time. We're not going to let this crowd intimidate us. It wasn't going to happen. We were coming in this house to win the game, and so was I. So I was having fun with it. Part of college football.
You can never feel comfortable until there's zeros on the clock. I mean, 21 seconds, and they drive down there and have a chance to tie it.
Oh, I knew they was going to miss it. Oh, shoot. You know, I hate it for the kids, you know, and all that.
Yeah, there's an open tryout, and you can announce this. There's an open tryout on our campus for kickers, you know. Anybody that wants a kick or walk on and kick at Mississippi State, you know, we'll hold a tryout anytime you can get over there to our building, providing you're cleared by the NC2A.
Welcome in to the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Michael on Twitter. And hey, we got a great guest lined up for the show. This is going to be mostly an interview pod. With this episode, we got Adam McClintock. He's been on the show before. He goes by the CFB Professor, and he gives out coaching grades based on his analytics system. So really looking forward to it. Long chat here I had with Adam to break down some of the first-year coaches in the SEC, how they're looking, some of the longtime coaches, how they're grading out as more and more data comes in on their coaching ability. And the first-year hires, man, he loves Billy Napier and Brian Kelly, those hires at Florida and LSU, respectively. But before we get to the interview with Adam, always like to start up with something fun if we can. And if you missed it, man, the Manning cast, we've praised that thing all season long. If you haven't been watching your Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli, you're doing it life wrong. The last one of the year, I assume it's going to be the last one because during the Rams-Cardinals playoff game, Monday Night Football edition. There's no more Monday Night Football, so I assume it's going to be the last time we're going to get Peyton and Eli on the air this year. And Peyton Manning, unfiltered right here. This was live on the air. I just thought this was phenomenal.
Before you do that, Larry, let's go to Peyton. He's going to break down that touchdown. I can't hear shit. Never mind. Peyton's doing something else, Larry, well, so you're back to you.
We can break.
Kyler's ready for this moment. First play.
I can only imagine Cousin Shade if he was on a live mic, national audience. I mean, this is the same type of reaction we'd be getting from him. But, hey, them Vols, no filter there. Love that for Peyton. And let's credit Eli. I mean, man, smooth transition from his brother cursing live on air, national television, Monday Night Football. Of course, Eli was the one that was flipping the birds during Monday Night Football. If you missed that, go back and check that out. I mean, that was maybe the most viral clip of the Manning cast this year. Let's hope we get more Manning casts in the future. Still disappointed a little bit that they didn't call the Ole Miss-Tennessee game. I mean, that would have been incredible, incredible television. But I just thought we had to lead the show off with that. And then one thing here before we get to our interview with Adam McClintock, and we're even actually going to talk about this during the interview, Kendall Briles, report from Brett McMurphy of the Action Network, now formerly of ESPN, that Kendall Briles has been offered the offensive coordinator role at Miami. And as of this recording Tuesday evening, no decision has been made one way or another. Kendall Briles, is he staying at Arkansas? Is he leaving from Miami? That would be a huge, huge loss for the Razorbacks. He's one of the best coordinators in the country. Again, Adam's going to talk about that, but I'll share a little inside info from what I'm hearing about this situation. Briles did, in fact, interview down there at Miami, I'm told. And this was a little while ago, and apparently the interview didn't go so well. So it's interesting. What I'm hearing is, you know, that didn't really seem to be an ideal fit with Mario Cristobal and the staff down there at Miami. So that, you know, I'm not saying Briles for sure is staying at Arkansas, but based on that bit of information, you know, this could be a contract play. And I have heard, I can't confirm, but I'm hearing that Arkansas is stepping up and willing to pay Briles a raise to stay. And I got to say that that's what you got to do if you're Arkansas. Let Kendall Briles continue to run this offense. The wonders he did with Felipe Franks 2 years ago. Of course, what he did to get KJ Jefferson as one of the SEC's top quarterbacks in the conference. Now one of the best quarterbacks in the country heading into his second year as a starting quarterback. Keeping Kendall Briles going to be paramount to Arkansas with there ain't no letdown in that schedule this next season. So continuity will be key. And the other thing I have heard about this Miami offensive coordinator position, the guy they really want is apparently Toledo head coach Jason Candle, I believe is how you say his name. Now, maybe they can't get him. You know, that's a tough pull to get a head coach to come be an offensive coordinator. Certainly wouldn't be the first time we've seen that. You know, we've seen a couple SEC programs pull that off, getting a head coach at a lower level to be a coordinator in the nation's best football conference. But this will certainly be something that we keep an eye on. But just based on the early intel I have, I think you got to like your odds if you're the Razorbacks to keep Kendall Briles. But like I said, certainly something that we'll have to keep an eye on and something that we discussed here with Adam McClintoff, the CFB professor. Let's kick it over to our interview with Adam. This is really great stuff, touching on a number of SEC teams. All right, we're pleased to once again be joined by Adam McClintock, better known as the CFB professor. Does an outstanding job. You gotta give him a follow at CFB_professor. And his Patreon page is one of the very few that I subscribe to. Gotta check it out. Patreon.com/CFB_professor. Same as the Twitter account. Adam, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it once again.
Hey, no problem, Mike. No problem. Just getting the offseason kicked off, and it's important to start off at least on bright note, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, before we get into, you know, what I really wanted to have you on here and some of your grades that your model puts out on the coaches, I know you've been on the show before. I think a lot of the listeners certainly remember you've been on the show. But can you briefly explain how your model grades these coaches for maybe some new listeners that didn't catch your last interview?
Absolutely. So basically what we have is we have a database of every single coach that has walked the sideline since 2009. And we grade their just their on-field performance, whether that be the head coach or the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator, based on the results relative to the talent that they have on their roster, and also relative to the talent that they play on their schedule every year. So it kind of creates an even playing field. So, for example, a coach at Alabama is expected to get good results. His bar is a lot higher than say somebody at Appalachian State because of the talent gap that he has week in and week out on his roster. So it is kind of a sliding scale. A guy who gets, you know, moderate results at Appalachian State is going to grade higher than a guy that gets moderate results at Alabama, because of that talent advantage that the guy at Alabama does have, his expectations are higher. So that basically, in a nutshell, is how we go about grading coaches, both head coach, offensive coordinator, and defensive coordinator.
And typically, the more data, the more accurate your system is, and as I understand it, you like to have at least 3 years of data on a coach before you feel really comfortable in the grade you give them. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely accurate. Yeah, 3 or 4 years is what we look for. After 3 or 4 years of data, the data set is usually pretty solid, and it doesn't deviate a whole lot from what has been established. Mm-hmm. So any coach that we have graded that has under 4 years of experience, we kind of call that it's not solid. The grade's not solid. We still will give them a grade, but we don't feel super comfortable with it until after a good 3 or 4 years of data.
Now, I really want to ask you about a lot of these coaches in the SEC, some of the new hires, what you think of them based on your model. But before I get to that, I got to commend the work you do once again at patreon.com/CFB_professor, because, man, Adam, I got to hand it to you. I mean, 24 hours before the playoff committee announces their top 25 every week, you guys basically have it down to you got at least 20 of them every week. And we're talking, if you miss, it's because you got number 21 at 22 or something like that. So without revealing your secrets, can you kind of maybe give some insight into what it is that you have it pegged down there with the College Football Playoff Committee and why you're so accurate predicting what the rankings are going to be?
Yeah, I mean, it starts off with the basis of, you know, the playoff committee is made up of, you know, presidents of companies, CEOs of companies, athletic directors, sitting athletic directors. These guys are busy, you know, with their you know, paying jobs during the week.
Mm-hmm.
This volunteer role that they've taken on the committee for, you know, what is it, 3 or 4 years at a time usually?
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the time to go through and watch film on 30 teams between this, you know, the time that the game's in on Saturday and the rankings come out on you know, basically Tuesday, right? Just assume that they watch an hour of film for each of those teams. That's 30 hours of film that they have to watch, understand what they're seeing, and digest. And be able to come up with a coherent ranking from the time, you know, on Saturday night after the Pac-12 games are over until Tuesday afternoon when the rankings have to be in. That's not feasible. And if anybody out there has been a part of a committee, you understand how not feasible that is to come to an agreement that quickly on such subjective criteria. So we you know, decided there had to be a quick and easy formula that they were using, or a quick and easy process. And just using, you know, some of the bread, you know, the breadcrumbs that Heather Dinich and some of the other reporters have done with this, we've used the strength of schedule that the committee uses. We figured out what they define as a quality win. We figured out what they define as a top 25 win, and they also use something called game control, which is basically minute by game minute. How what is your scoring margin of the game? How in control are you of that game, minute by minute throughout the game? Those are the only elements that they use, and it's kind of a sliding scale of what's more important. For example, if you have a poor strength of schedule, okay, say your strength of schedule is ranked in the hundreds, your game control has to be one of the best in the country, because they want to see that, okay, you have a poor schedule, you better be controlling that schedule from whistle to whistle. So they look at things in groups like that to help kind of decide which teams go where. That's basically it. That's basically how we come up with our poll. Is we take those basic elements, we sort them, and we go four teams by four teams in groups, and we rank them that way. And that is exactly how the committee has done it for 14 years, since 2014.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't varied. You know, committee members have come and gone, and that process has stayed the same.
Yeah, it really is terrific. You got to give Adam a follow, like I said, at CFB_professor, because during the season, it'll be Monday, and he'll literally have a thread. All right, here's the top 25, and here's why these teams are ranked. And like I said, I mean, you guys really nail it there. So I had to commend you on that. I mean, the Patreon page is worth the price of admission just for that. But my favorite part is these coaching grades. And I love them because people just think, you know, everybody loves to throw out opinions on these coaches and how they graded out and how a hire went and all this. But you're taking the human element out of it. And this is based purely on data. So, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with many of the grades you guys give out. So I wanted to start with the first-year coaches we had in the SEC this year, with the understanding that some of these guys may not have a long track record. So, you know, the grade may not be quite as solid just yet. But Let's start with Tennessee's head coach, Josh Heupel, who surprisingly led the Vols to a bowl win here. What grade did your analytics give Josh Heupel this year?
Josh Heupel had a good year. And you know, if people out there were listening to, I believe it was me and you, before the season started, mm-hmm. we talked about Josh Heupel and what he was going to be able to accomplish this year at Tennessee. And we said that he was going to be in the 7-5 or 6-6 win range.
Mm-hmm.
And he did just that. He performed kind of how we expected and exceeded it, just maybe even slightly. We have him ranked as a solid B+ coach who had a solid B+ year. I mean, that's kind of what we expected out of Josh Heupel, and he surely delivered. Let's see here. Let me tell you exactly his career grade. After the season, his career grade jumped up to he's a B+ A- head coach now. So that just tells you, you know, he's the real deal. And not only that, but he's the play caller. He's been the play caller for his offenses ever since he's been a head coach. He's also a terrific play caller. He was actually graded higher as a play caller coming into the season than he was a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all good things. All good things for Vols fans. I mean, the defensive coordinator came in and I think he did better than what was expected out of him. I think that the Vols defense was, let's see, what I have them ranked at end of this year. Give me one second here to take a peek. I know this is great radio. Let's see. Yeah, the Vols defense, you know, Tim Banks in his first year, it's always a struggle for defensive coordinators to come in and kind of handle the pace of a Josh Heupel offense.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to have a dominant defense just because of the number of plays that they're asked to defend per game. Tim Banks, his defensive efficiency was ranked 67th this year, which, you know, isn't great. But with a Josh Heupel offense, the way they play, that only has to be a top 40 defense before that team becomes, you know, a headache to deal with.
Hmm.
So I mean, you're looking at teams like, oh, for example, the you know, tongue in cheek, the 2017 national championship UCF team, you know. that defense was barely a top 50 defense, but the offense was so prolific that they're able to get by with it. Now the SEC is a different animal than the AAC, admittedly, but in order to get, you know, double digit wins, I think that Tennessee fans would love to see, you know, would accept, that defense is going to have to come up to about the 45 range. But first year there, he's, you know, the transfer portal is going to help them get some more guys on defense there, and we'll see how Tim Banks does in year two.
Now, what about Brian Harsin at Auburn? Because at the midway point in the season, I was ready to give this guy SEC Coach of the Year. Auburn was in contention in the SEC West, and then they kind of fall flat on their face their tail end of the season. So I recall you saying, you know, he's a good coach, not an elite coach. He was, you know, at Boise, he had more talent than the vast majority of the teams he faced in that league. So how did he grade out his first year at Auburn? And were you surprised at all that they fired Mike Bobo, the offensive coordinator, after just 1 year?
Yeah, I was. That was puzzling. Mike Bobo's offense really wasn't that bad, I didn't think. I mean, I don't know what Auburn fans think about it, but from where I'm sitting, you know, the Auburn offense, you know, the season, I guess looking at it right now, yeah, they were kind of bad. The season rankings 80th. So yeah, maybe he deserved to be fired, but I mean, that 1 year, that's tough to do. I think I like to give a guy 2 or 3 years before you pull the pin on him so quickly, especially somebody like Mike Bobo, who's been around the SEC and knows that conference so well. Brian Harsin really needs somebody like that on his staff on the offensive side to kind of help him out, because he doesn't really have a lot of guys on that offensive staff that are SEC guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Defensive side, the different story. You have Derek Mason over there, who is, you know, one of the premier defensive coordinators in the country, and you know, he didn't have his best year at Auburn either. His defense ranked 36th in the country this year in defensive efficiency, which is not where Auburn fans are used to seeing it. But that's still a solid season for a first-year defensive coordinator. But yeah, Brian Harsin had a C grade year. It's average year for him. Overall, he's just a B grade coach, just barely above average, right? And he kind of showed that. He kind of got in a league where he didn't have that massive talent advantage like he enjoyed at Boise State all those years in the Mountain West, and I think it showed a little bit. He got outcoached in some games, and I think he made some staff changes in the offseason trying to remedy that. But mm-hmm. We'll see how that works out for him. I know he hired an offensive coordinator that I'm not familiar with. I don't think has called a play at the FBS level, so that's not ever super encouraging. But we'll see what happens.
Now, what about Shane Beamer down there at South Carolina? I know he's just got the 1 year, so the grade is not solid like you like it to be. But a lot of momentum with that program. The fans are very, very excited after his debut. What's the early grade for Shane Beamer down there at South Carolina?
Like you said, it's early with Shane Beamer, but for a first-year head coach who's never been a head coach before to step in, in the SEC and play the schedule he did and play as well as he did, he had a C plus year, okay, which it's not great. I don't think anybody at South Carolina can say that, we're back or anything like that with the season. Mm-hmm. But I think you can see there very plainly that there is progress being made. He even outperformed the expectations we had for him in year one. So there is a lot to be extremely encouraged about at South Carolina right now. He brings in, Spencer Rattler and some of these Oklahoma transfers that are coming in, and that should help bolster that offense. The defense was what won him games this year. He needs to get that offense up to pace. I think Marcus Satterfield kind of had a rough introduction to the SEC, to put it mildly. We'll see how he does with his influx of talent and if that can improve. If that does, Clayton White is a good defensive coordinator. He'll come along, and Shane Beamer should be in good shape for the next couple of years.
Now, what about this guy's a little polarizing? A&M, Texas A&M coach Jimbo Fisher, they're loving the momentum down there. The Aggies just got the number one recruiting class, but that's not something that you're factoring in necessarily on the coaching grades. It's all about how they do on the field. They beat Alabama, yet they lose to both the Mississippi schools. They lose to Arkansas. What do you make of Jimbo Fisher, and what's his overall grade? Because I think people are surprised that he's often not higher, but maybe he hasn't earned that higher grade just yet.
No, it was kind of a disappointing year from our grading end on him. We had him as a C- year. That win over Alabama really stayed him. Otherwise, he'd been in the D range for this year. You read off the results yourself there. You can't lose to both Mississippi schools. You can't lose to, LSU, who is outmanned. You can't lose to Arkansas, and then beat Alabama and have all the preseason expectations that they had. I mean, mm-hmm. This was supposed to be the year A&M, challenged for the division, and instead they were out of it by the fifth or sixth week, right?
Right.
So that can't be something that they're, he wins the offseason. He really wins the offseason, but until he can start winning consistently against the teams that he's supposed to beat week in and week out, I think that, 9-3, 10-2 is kind of going to be the mode there in College Station.
Now, how big of a hit potentially did the Aggies take losing Mike Elko? He's now the head coach of Duke. I know your model loved Mike Elko as a defensive coordinator. Now they've hired DJ Durkin. Is that a downgrade, or is that about a fair trade there? What do you think?
Oh, that's a big downgrade in our grade book. Mike Elko, he was one of the, coming from Wake Forest to Notre Dame to Texas A&M, he was one of the more steady defensive performers. You know, he had an excellent year at Texas A&M this year. He's the reason they won some of those games. I think he had a top, he looked here really fast. I think he had a top 15 defense this year. Mm-hmm. He was number three. He had the third best defense in the country this year in per play efficiency. So that's a big loss. That you don't just step in and replace that. CJ Durkin is a above average defensive coordinator, but he's not to the same level as Mike Elko is. You're not going to be able to lean on DJ Durkin's defense and have him win you games when your offense sputters like it did this year. That's not the type of defensive coordinator he is. He's going to hold the other team at bay, but you better get your offense going or you're going to lose some games.
Now, what about Sam Pittman at Arkansas? Again, he's another one. You don't have a ton of track record because he's only been a head coach for 2 years, but I know the model was not in love with him last year. Obviously, a much better year this year. How does the model grade out the job Sam Pittman's doing? And how about, I was also curious, his coordinators, Barry Odom and Kendall Briles, what's your model think of his two coordinators as well?
You know, Sam Pittman, when he was hired, I tell people who kind of follow me to really rally behind Sam Pittman and that staff, because although he had not been a head coach before coming into Arkansas, I saw the staff that he had hired in Kendall Briles and Barry Odom, and some of their support staff was really, really good. Mm-hmm. He built it the right way at Arkansas, and he stays out of the way and lets his coaches coach. And he is kind of the recruiting face of the program, which if you know anything about Sam Pittman, he's a top-notch recruiter. You know, he was mm-hmm. at Georgia. He's a top-notch recruiter. So I really like what he's doing at Arkansas. He had a good season. He had a top 35 season for a head coach at Arkansas. The defense, the offensive coordinator, Kendall Briles is one of my favorite in the country. He had the 45th best offense in the country last year. But you take that in the scope of him playing against, you know, the SEC West with the talent level that Arkansas has, which isn't, he's a bottom two or three recruiter in that division. That's pretty spectacular. They better hold on to Kendall Briles tight. I think there's some teams coming for him in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the top notch offensive coordinators in the country. And he's a guy you hold on to with, you give him as much money as it takes to keep him there. Same can be said for Barry Odom. His defensive performance this year was also outstanding. It was really, really good for the talent level. I wouldn't say outstanding. But for Arkansas levels of the past few years, he did a very good job. They need to keep the staff together as long as they can, because it's going to give them a chance to be an 8-9 win team in the SEC West and be a thorn in the team's side. I don't know if Arkansas recruits to a level where we could ever seriously consider them, you know, upending Alabama or upending, you know, some of the other teams in that division. But they can be that team that nobody wants to play week in and week out, and I think that's what Arkansas fans like to see.
Yeah, and you talk about what they face. I mean, my goodness, I don't know who at Arkansas pissed off the SEC, but they've had to play Georgia 2 years in a row. I mean, give them a break, you know what?
Yeah, and, you know, he took that schedule, you know, where you had to play Georgia, and had to play A&M, and had to play LSU. And, you know, I know LSU was a little bit down this year, but still LSU. You know, and had to play Auburn, had to play A&M, you know. I mean, he did not get a break this year. He had played at Ole Miss. He had played Tech. He played Texas early. I mean, and he took that schedule and went 8-4. I mean, that's just impressive. That's just impressive. Like I said, they got to keep that staff together as long as they can, paying what they need to be paid to stay there in Fayetteville and just be a thorn in people's sides, because that's exactly what they are right now.
Now, speaking of an impressive season, Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, you know, they just won 10 games in the regular season, first time in program history. What's your model say about the job Lane Kiffin's doing there at Ole Miss?
Lane Kiffin did excellent this year. They're actually pretty, you know, balanced offense and defense. Their offense was, the season rank on the offense was 40th. The season rank on the defense was 43rd. The offense slowed down a little bit late. I can't remember off the top of my head if they have injuries or COVID issues at Ole Miss, but their offense really slowed down towards the end of the year.
Their quarterback, Matt Corral, got hurt.
Yes, that's what it was. I knew there was something I was forgetting about why that offense slowed down, but yeah, you know, and he still was able to finish, you know, where they did, even without a player like Matt Corral, which is saying a lot. Now, he'll have to they lost a really good running back coach to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Smith left for Miami. They'll have to replace him. They lost DJ Durkin. I think they've already promoted Chris Parks, which up to that point, up to that position. Bit of a downgrade. Lane's going to have to get an influx of talent in with the portal and hope that Chris Parks' defense can at least hold their end of the deal up. Overall, I think that the coaching staff that'll be in place next year will be downgraded from the one that was there this year. So we'll just have to see how that affects the on-field result.
Now, staying in that state, Mike Leach, the Pirate, you know, we all love watching his team. They got the deck stacked against them many times in the SEC, just given the talent they inherited. But he's already rewriting the offensive record books down there. He's going on the road. He's beating teams like A&M and Auburn on the road. What's your system say about the job Mike Leach is doing for Mississippi State?
He's doing what Mike Leach does. I mean, this is what he does. He did it in Lubbock. You know, he did it in Pullman, and now he's doing it in Starkville. And you know, it takes 2 or 3 years for his system, because it is a system. You know, he has to have the players in his system to run his system. And once he gets them in there and gets them developed and the way he wants it, that offense it's tough to stop. It is very tough to stop with unless you have just an overwhelming amount of talent to overwhelm it. The defensive side of the ball needs to come up a little bit. Arndt had a little bit of a struggle this year. I think their defense was 79th in my rankings at the end of the season, but which makes him a C or C plus grade defensive coordinator. That's going to have to improve if they want to really challenge this year. But I don't think they had any major staff losses this year. I think you're going to see Mississippi State bump up to that, you know, 8, 9, 10 win range next year.
Now, Eli Drinkwitz, I know that's someone your model was very high on heading into the season. And I think, you know, part of that again goes back to the fact that he's been a head coach not very long at all. What's your model say about the job he's doing after, you know, a little bit of a disappointing season there at Missouri this year?
Yeah, we, you know, coming into the year, we only had 1 or 2 years on hand. It was both it was 1 year at Appalachian State and 1 year the first year at Missouri, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He's a prime example of, you know, when people would ask what his grade was, I'd tell them, but I'd always make sure to sprinkle in a little, you know, grain of salt with that, because, you know, we saw what the grade said, but we had no. No faith in that high of a grade for him. We think he'll end up being about a C+, B- type head coach. He's a good recruiter. He's a good offensive mind in some aspects. His offense still has 68th ranked offense this year. His defense was ranked 112th, which was a disaster. Defense just has to improve. Steve Wilks, you know, his first year in the SEC was a rough one. It doesn't get much worse than the Missouri defense. And the thing is Missouri, you know, they're in the same boat as Arkansas is in the West, except Missouri is going the opposite direction. They don't have the talent to get in the ring and swing with Georgia or Florida or Tennessee or some of those. So they have to develop the talent. They have to out X's and O's people, and I'm not convinced they have the coaching staff to do that right now. So it might be a struggle at Missouri for a little while until they can kind of get their bearing.
Now, what about your grade for Mark Stoops? Because I know that Kentucky fans every offseason, they think your model hates Kentucky. You're out against the Wildcats, but another 10-win season. Can you give us the updated ranking for Stoops? And what did you think? Again, I know it's early. It's kind of tough to grade them, but – the first-year offensive coordinator, Liam Cohen, he seemed to inject some life into that offense this year.
Yeah, Liam Cohen had a good year. I mean, he bounced. That offense wasn't terrible last year, but he took that offense that was you know really successful between the 20s last year, and he was able to get some of those red zone opportunities cashed in this year with the team. The offense was ranked 32nd this year. The defense was down a little bit this year at Kentucky, which is kind of surprising for a Mark Stoops team. It was 53rd in the country in defense this year. That's going to have to improve. They can't let that slip. Brad White, I think, he's a good defensive coordinator. He'll get it figured out. But I really like his coaching staff right now. You know, if they can hold everything together. I still, Mark Stoops, he wins the games he's supposed to win.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, he has lost the games he's supposed to lose. So, you know, he beat Florida this year. You know, that was good. He beat LSU, but like you said, LSU really wasn't LSU this year. And then he turns around and he loses to Georgia, loses to Mississippi State, loses to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so his wins ended up being this year against Louisiana Monroe, Missouri, Chattanooga, South Carolina, you know, Vanderbilt, New Mexico State, Louisville. I mean, he should beat all those teams. So, you know, his grade kind of reflects that. He's a C+, you know, graded coach where he's better than average. But you don't expect him to go in and beat Georgia or beat, you know, LSU and LSU's LSU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to lose those games. That's what the coach he has there. Which, for Kentucky standards, I mean, that has to be great. If you can get away with 8, 9, 10 wins in the SEC East, you know, you're cooking with peanut oil there.
All right. Yeah, it's all right, Adam. You hate Mark Stoops. We'll move on. But I'm just kidding. But hey, one guy I really wanted to ask you about, because this is something that we hit on in the preseason, Todd Monken, Georgia offensive coordinator, a little bit of a low grade. You said, you know, it would be an outlier if Georgia won with Todd Monken as the offensive coordinator. But I thought he had a terrific year this year. What did your model say about the job Todd Monken did calling Georgia's offense?
He did an excellent job. The offense was ranked 5th this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kirby Smart kind of took the handcuffs off a little bit this year. That was my biggest concern coming into the season is a lot of the offensive coordinators under Kirby Smart, I felt like, were a little handcuffed, and he didn't let them kind of just let loose and call games, you know, the way that they were wanting to call them. Mm-hmm. Him being a defensive head coach, you know, more of a conservative-minded guy, this was really the first time in the season that I've seen him allow his offense to kind of get out and get on people. And I think it's because he had a generational defense, and he knows he had a generational defense that, you know, even if his offense threw a pick two or pick here or screwed up here or there, that they were going to be able to get it back on defense. And, you know, I think hopefully this was a good lesson for Smart that, hey, let Monken roll. Let Monken cook. You know, he's mm-hmm. fine. He had the number 5 offense in the country with Stetson Bennett, who is a great story, but he's not the prototypical, you know, high numbered quarterback that Georgia could possibly get in the next coming years.
Right.
So if he continues to let Todd Monken do his thing, then Georgia could be a headache, you know, for many, many years to come. Because I don't think that defense is changing. I don't think that talent, that the talent influx is going to change. Georgia's just going to be a monster for a while.
All right, last two, Adam. I really appreciate all your time. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the new hires in the SEC. Billy Napier, former Louisiana coach, of course, now the face of the Florida Gators program. What can Florida fans anticipate based on your model's grade for Billy Napier?
Well, we love Billy Napier. We feel like he was probably the best G5 option out there, and one of the best head coaching options, period, out there for Florida to get. He's a B+ head coach, you know. So he's in our estimation, he is an upgrade over Dan Mullen. I love the staff he's put together so far. I mean, you get Sean Spencer as the defensive line coach. He's one of the better ones in the business. You get, you know, Corey Raymond as a secondary coach. He's one of the better ones in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Toney is an up-and-comer at you know, a defensive coordinator position that is of the Dave Aranda tree. So, you know, all that with getting Rob Sale to come back out of the NFL as an offensive line coach. He's put together a really bang-up staff, and Florida fans should be excited about this staff and anxious to see how it turns out.
Now, what about Brian Kelly at LSU, of course, former Notre Dame, former Cincinnati coach, comes with a very, very strong resume. But what does your model say about Brian Kelly?
Brian Kelly is one of the premier head coaches in the country. He's one of the more seasoned guys out there. It was kind of a home run, you know, a type of swing there for LSU, and they happened to connect on it. Now, I'm kind of worried a little bit about fit, because LSU and Baton Rouge is one of those places where you have to fit. Mm-hmm. And Brian Kelly being one of those guys that has spent his entire career in the Rust Belt, I'm not for sure how that's going to work with him down at LSU. I think X and O's wise, he's a great head coach, and he's going to serve it well. But he needs to get some guys on staff that are familiar with the SEC. And so far with, you know, Cortez Hankins, he got the wide receiver coach from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled him in. I think that'll help. He did hire Mike Denbrook, who is another Rust Belt guy. I'm not really for sure how that's going to fit. It's a good staff. I'm not really for sure how it's going to work at LSU. So that's one of those wait and see ones.
So safe to say you were not a fan of his family speech. You saw that?
No, that was brutal. That was brutal. I mean, whoever was his acting coach needs to be fired, because he was terrible.
Well, that's a great place to cut you off, Adam. I really, really appreciate you. Give him a follow, Adam McClintock, at CFB_professor. And don't forget to check on the Patreon page, patreon.com/CFB_professor. And a link to that can be found in the podcast show notes. So, Adam, thanks again for all this time you give me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, Mike. No problem. I appreciate it.
All right. So just want to say thanks again, Adam, for joining the show. You know, some of his comments from the last episode went pretty viral when the lead up to last season. He's going to come back on when we get closer to next football season to kind of give us some insights into, you know, how his model predicts these teams to finish in the SEC. But I really, really appreciate the information there. And the thing I love about him, you know, this is all data driven. This is not an opinion based model. This is raw data, how he grades these coaches and coordinators. He does an outstanding job. And like I said, I mean, he gives you a play by play before the playoff rankings even come out. He's cracked the code on how that thing's going to break down. So does a tremendous job. Got to check out his Patreon page. Again, that's patreon.com/CFB_professor. Cannot recommend that enough. But hey, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. I know there's, you know, a couple news and notes around the SEC didn't get to on this episode. We will get to those on the next episode, but gotta cut this one short. But I do appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out. We'll catch you on the next one.